Well, thanks today for tuning in to 96.3 FM Ohm Radio Charleston. I'm Whitney Powers, and I'm your host today for the series Small Talks, Big Ideas. We're a weekly 30-minute plus or minus show that is a collaborative space shared by some of our community's advocacy organizations, and that includes Lowcountry Local First, the Coastal Conservation League, and If You Were Mayor. And while these organizations, oh, and that's us, by the way, yes. If You Were Mayor, and while these organizations serve different needs in our community, they really are largely aligned in their vision for the future. And so Small Talks, Big Ideas is a space for each of these organizations to share their ideas, have tough but necessary conversations, and invite you as listeners into our work. So for today's segment, we welcome Charlie Smith, who's a real estate professional in the Charleston region, and he's made an interesting commitment to West Ashley so that it is more than just an afterthought in the Charleston region. And I just want to say hello, Charlie, and welcome to Small Talks, Big Ideas with If You Were Mayor.
Well, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Great. Well, I know you've been active in the local community for some time. In fact, I recall several years ago that you ran for office and you rode a Segway. You were noted for riding a Segway to campaign from door to door. Now, that was long enough ago that the idea of a Segway tour was not even conceived of. And so you certainly got, you had a perspective that many of us at this stage look back on as right on the cusp of so many things that about mobility and transportation that we're actually talking about today. In fact, not to say that we're riding Segways, but we probably should be considering a lot more options. But that really does make you on the forefront of mobility.
I had a Corbin Sparrow at the time here for a while, so quite interesting. But the problem with that was if you pull up next to somebody at a traffic light, they were just as likely to look at you and run into the people in front of them.
Oops.
As they were. Because it was such a strange-looking thing.
Oh, my gosh. Well, more recently, you have been involved with a group of West Ashley residents who actually convinced the city to buy land that a local towing company had intended to use for their operations on Savannah Highway. And that site, adjacent to the Fireman's Memorial, extended to the West Ashley Greenway, in essence, and would have really been a neighborhood downer. And I think while that group, including yourself, had hoped that that site could be a farmer's market, I mean, you really sort of pushed it as that this is something West Ashley needed. I believe there's a fire station that's going there, but just noted that a farmer's market is coming to West Ashley. So this direction certainly beats a fire station. You might have give us a little background because I think that sort of was the first time that I realized this sort of groundswell of things. I mean, obviously, Avondale was kind of a grassroots initiative, but this is further out, and the idea of groundswell of grassroots kinds of things in other parts of West Ashley, it's time.
And it definitely is.
And maybe if you can give us a little insight into how those things are happening and where we're seeing those and where some of that activity is happening.
Well, I can tell you that in the what we refer to now as the DuPont area, which was historically also the DuPont area, but the name had gone out of use after the railways were no longer running through West Ashley. Those place names kind of faded away. And it was sad to see that happen because that was the beginning of the deterioration of the edges of the neighborhoods where we live around there. And while there's been great focus on the commercial value of Savannah Highway and 61 because of their visibility and the volume of traffic that goes through them, the neighborhoods that adjoin that really had begun to decline because they weren't really well interfaced with Savannah Highway and the commercial corridors anymore. And this was also at a time, we've had some periods in Charleston where we had zoning that was not really as good as it should have been. And a lot of that time happened in the 70s. And I think that was a big part of what happened on Savannah Highway. The end result of that has been that in one neighborhood on Savannah Highway, we have 114 acres of automobile dealerships that have frontage on Savannah Highway in the stretch just between IHOP and 526.
Wow.
If we did that to any other neighborhood in Charleston County, they would be up in arms. But what happened was that the automobile dealerships began to cause the businesses that we have depended on in the neighborhoods there to close, because the land just got eaten up for these big lots. The larger commercial stores like Kmart, for instance, that was 10 acres of property in the middle of the neighborhood that is now all dealerships. And we've lost grocery store after grocery store over there. We've lost the car drug. We've lost restaurants. We've lost bakeries. We've lost all the things that make livability work in a neighborhood. Those things have, over time, just eroded away. And I have my background is in planning. I have my master's in planning, but also have an undergraduate degree here from College of Charleston in urban studies. So I've had a long interest in this and how we balance the things that are important to us with the business ventures that we need to have to keep our economy moving.
Right.
And there really is a balance that has to happen there. But it's been out of whack west of Ashley for a while.
Well, it certainly has. Let's talk a little bit more about you and your background. You just mentioned the fact that you have this planning background, you mentioned that you went to the College of Charleston, but I suspect that you probably went away, but you've ended up back here. And maybe if you just give us,
we always do.
If you wanted to give us maybe some perspective. I mean, this is the reason why I value your. If you were mayor, if valued your opinion and your contributions to our website. And so if you would maybe just give a little background and sort of enlighten us a little bit more.
Sure. I grew up here on James Island primarily when I was a child. We lived out there for several years in the old South Point area. So I was living on James Island in the late 60s when it was still a rural area, and West Ashley still had cabbage farms and onion farms and things like that out Savannah Highway. Those things were still tied to the community. And so I remember those things. So when I drive out into James Island and into West Ashley, those things are still present in my mind. So I see the changes that have occurred. My father worked for a company that opened offices very aggressively in South Carolina back in the 60s. So we moved about every 3 years. And while as a child, that's not a lot of fun, as an adult, it wound up being a really great thing, because when I came back to the College of Charleston and all of my friends that I'd met in different places all over South Carolina were coming back to the College of Charleston, it was really kind of a great thing to have that core group of friends from all over the state. And I've kept that.
That's great.
So College of Charleston, I wound up with a urban studies degree. I was very interested in historic preservation and had actually worked for Historic Charleston for most of the time I was in college here, and also for the National Trust, doing some southeastern regional stuff for them on built environment education programs and things like that. So when I finished, went to Clemson, to the only city and regional planning program in the state at the time. Which was a great program, very small, but within the College of Architecture. So we had the architectural element was always there because we were within the School of Architecture,
right,
which was,
right.
You know, to me that was really important coming from Charleston, because we live and breathe architecture here.
Right.
And good neighborhoods too, as a matter of fact. So when I finished with planning school in 1984, I had the opportunity to go to Miami to work for a native of Andrews, South Carolina, who had become one of the largest high-rise luxury waterfront developers in the state. And he was, at the time, buying a lot of distressed properties, major high-rises on the waterfront, and finishing them out and doing bank workouts for the most part back during the savings and loan crisis. So that got me started in the high-rise luxury condominium stuff in Miami. And then when the company was sold, I was hired by the City of Miami Beach as their development coordinator during the time of the South Beach revitalization.
So this was the Miami Vice era.
Absolutely. I was on Brickell Avenue, right? If you remember the building with the hole in the middle,
yes,
of it and the palm
absolutely.
Tree, I was right next door to that. So it was a great time to be in Miami.
Oh, superb. And then you ended up back here.
Came back here. I just, my partner passed away in 1995. And with that, I decided I'd wait a year and see what I really wanted to do. And I realized my grandfather was still living, and I had my niece and nephews here in South Carolina that I hadn't been able to spend a lot of time with. So I decided it was time to come home, but I hadn't really decided whether I wanted to come back to Charleston or not. So I came back for 3 months and spent a lot of time just observing what was going on here, and particularly what Mayor Riley was doing, because I'll tell you, he's one of the most phenomenal mayors that any city in this country has ever had. And what he was doing all during his term was just phenomenal. So when I came back and I found programs, preservation programs and livability programs and all these things that make a city livable. And then I also found Tom Myers, who was founder of We Are Family, that was working with LGBT kids, and that was a real focus of mine. And I realized that Charleston was way ahead of even Miami on working with kids that had no one to go to. So
right.
Charleston really had a lot of the qualities of the place that I wanted to be. So after 3 months, I decided I was ready to come home.
Well, that's great. And I do, I think we're lucky to have you and your insights. And I do want to thank you for what you've shared at If You Were Mayor. And that became a blog post entitled Reaching a Critical Miss in West Ashley.
And we did.
And I do consider that to be part of our discussion today, or a point of departure for our discussion today. And you've also shared your perspective on West Ashley's future potential during the first of many, many, many mayoral forums in February 2015. And for those listeners who may have missed either of these posts, send us an email through the contact link at www.ifyouweremayor.com, and we'll forward you links to both of those discussions, so you can read up a bit more detail on some of the things that we might touch on today. And really, based on that guest blog post, you've obviously given a lot of thought to how West Ashley can actually play a bit of catch up with some of the basic planning strategies that have spurred economic development in downtown Charleston. I understand that the Tecklenburg administration is really working diligently to devise some strategic planning for West Ashley. And there are things like the Citadel Mall redevelopment, which actually sort of began during the Riley administration. There were public meetings, and they've published sort of a study of that. In fact, they're looking for someone to purchase that property and move forward with some of those ideas. There was the Rethink Folly Road process, yes. And those both are really on the agenda of the administration based on recent conversations. So much of the focus would seem to be on commercial, enlivening the commercial areas. I mean, we've obviously seen success at Avondale in that regard. But you mentioned that there were lots of infill possibilities in the residential neighborhoods that actually might coalesce around some of this focus on the commercial districts and the commercial thoughts. And affordable housing, and maybe that's informed a little bit by the history. Maybe you want to give us a little bit more insight. You talked about
Sure.
the stations and railroads and things.
West Ashley probably has older history than anywhere else in South Carolina as far as European settlement. I mean, South Carolina was founded West Ashley. Charleston was founded West Ashley. And there were so many important families that were part of what was then called St. Andrew's Parish, and parts of it still are, but in modern day terms, we use the West Ashley almost as kind of the suburb of Charleston, but it was really much larger than that. And in fact, James Island was also part of St. Andrew's Parish for a long time. So it was quite a large land area. The main road that went through it, people who travel on James Island today and they go down Riverland Drive and they see those beautiful old oak trees and they know that there's history there. They just really don't know what it is. When you come west of the Ashley and you get on Wapu Road, you feel the same way. And the reason for that is it's the same road.
Uh-huh.
It used to be connected.
Was there a ferry?
There was actually the Edgewater Bridge.
Oh, wow.
And the Sandy Bay Causeway that goes out to Edgewater Park was part of that. And there was actually a bridge that went over to the James Island side of the St. Andrew's Parish. And the road was called the King's Highway, and it came it came up to beyond actually where 17 is now. It went all the way over to 61, but it went all the way out to Sault Agree. So it was quite different than you would think of the traffic pattern today. You have to go all the way around to the other side of the county to get to the other end of it now. But when you look at it, you see it has the same profile, the same characteristics, and you know. That area, obviously, was one of the older areas. There were a lot of folks out there, like Governor John Geddes, whose family had been out there since the late 18th century, had six plantations that were all connected. We still see them in subdivision names out there, Tiger Swamp, Geddes Hall, Godfrey's. You see these subdivision names, but they were actually the names of place names of historic spots that were there as well. But six of them were owned by the Geddes family, and John Geddes was governor of South Carolina and then later was the intendant of Charleston, or what we call mayor now. His granddaughter later married Wilfred DuPont.
Okay.
So we have the Geddes and the DuPonts, and the DuPonts, Gilbert Geddes DuPont, was a descendant of the same folks as the family in Delaware. They were descended from Jean, one brother, and Abraham was the ancestor of all of the Charleston folks. But the Charleston folks came here in 1696. The Delaware folks didn't get to Delaware until much later. So the chemical company there wasn't even founded until 1802. So the Charleston DuPonts had been here a long time. So the DuPonts, the Geddeses, the Seabrooks, and the Chalmers, and all of these families were interconnected in this little area because they all had plantations out there. DuPont grew up as a community because in 1809, the South Carolina legislature approved the charter for the Charleston Bridge Tunnel Company. And that included the turnpike road that led to the bridge, as well as the bridge if they had one. And if they didn't have a bridge, they had the right to use the ferry.
Right.
So they had the whole thing locked up there, the road, the bridge, and the ferry, no matter what they had to use. We only ever had three bridges there. One in 1809 that was blown away in 1813 in a cyclone. One that was built in 1856 that had to be burned by the Confederates to keep Sherman's army from marching into Charleston and destroying the city, and was largely the reason that Sherman's army went to Columbia instead of coming to Charleston, because the bridge had been burned, they couldn't get into the city. And then in 1882, that bridge was replaced. So there were huge gaps between these bridges.
Right.
And then the Memorial Bridge opened in 1926. But that route, which became Savannah Highway, intersected with what was the King's Highway, and that community developed as the DuPont community. 1860 comes, and we have the Charleston and Savannah Railway that ran from where about Port Gowd is now down to Savannah. And there were 14 place names between where Port of God is now and where the Greenway today stops out on John's Island. So those historic place names were there. And that's something I'd like to see come back on the Greenway, by the way. I think it would be a good safety feature for people to know where they are, and also historically accurate as to the place names.
Well, I know the Parks Conservancy has actually just received a big grant to start some thinking and redesign and renovation, I guess you'd call it, of the Greenway, to sort of make it a much more friendly path, especially related to the coming Legree Bridge bike lanes.
And it's also the best tool that we have for integrating the neighborhoods with the commercial areas on the other side of the Greenway.
Right.
And to get people to use that and to know where businesses are located along the Greenway instead of just Savannah Highway would be really useful. So later on, we have the Seaboard Airline Railway that comes in mostly through the marshes up to DuPont, across John's Island up to DuPont, and then it turns and curves, and then it actually physically crossed at DuPont Crossing, which was also in this community. And those of you who've been here remember the Piggly Wiggly, where Sofa Superstore burned. Mm-hmm. The crossing was right behind that, and the track used to come through the parking lot at the Piggly Wiggly and cross Savannah Highway and go over to the produce shed and out Maryville, and then across to the Citadel and to the Grove Street Station. So that's the way that line used to go. So that's why we have the bike path and the Greenway now, because of those two railways.
And we have an intersection there that actually has an enormous amount of potential
Absolutely.
To being a real hub of activity in it, and hopeful to see that happen in my lifetime.
Yes, yes. And I have to say, I live in that area, so I haven't been able to do everything that I would like to do. But over the 20 years that I've been back there, I probably bought and renovated 10 of the worst properties in the area to make sure that we didn't have these gaps in the neighborhood, that we didn't have, if the building had to be taken down, that it was replaced with something instead of leaving a gap. I mean, it's like seeing someone that has teeth missing when you drive
right
through a neighborhood and you see these holes. So what I tried to do in the DuPont area myself in my work and in bringing clients to the area as well is to get people to realize the value of reconnecting the neighborhood.
That's great.
So we bought up that whole block on Wapoo Road, and we now have the dentistry place at 537. We've got the pharmacy on at 531, and the hair salon next door, and all of that used to all be mostly a junkyard, and had been for years and years, but now it's great, and the neighborhood is kind of tied back together. People who live over there use those businesses a lot.
That's great, because they do sort of connect back into the neighborhood, and I think that's pretty exciting.
It is, and we tie them architecturally and in scale to the neighborhood as well, too. So you're not overpowering or insulting the neighborhood
right
with something that's too big.
Right, right. Well, so you really feel that these, these little seeds that have been planted by you and others, I mean, I'm sure you're not alone in this, but that you're really finding that the people who've lived there for a long time are embracing these ideas or looking forward to these changes?
Yes, yes. And the greatest triumph of this has been the DuPont Wapoo study area that is now referred to as the Doo-Wop.
Right.
Which is great because it's gotten that word back into the vocabulary so people know what it is and they understand what's going on. They're excited about it. When you see something in the newspaper, people are reading those articles because they want to see what's happening.
Yeah.
And with the intersection changes at Wapoo and Savannah Highway, I think will be somewhat similar to the Avondale improvements. There'll be tree-lined streets in that area. There'll be a much better connection between the bike path and the greenway. That's going to be significantly better.
Right.
And hopefully on the Limehouse property there at the corner where the produce shed was, mm-hmm, we'll be able to get something that's really useful for the neighborhood that the design is quality design and something that will be
a
landmark for the neighborhood.
Yeah, I think that's very hopeful, and I mean I think that you have a lot of reason to sort of feel like that's really possible. And actually for now, and I think I mentioned this earlier, that the city is in the process of putting together a 19-person commission to guide the development of a comprehensive plan for West Ashley, which we hope will be used, and it's meant to complement the Century 5 plan, which has been in use for the peninsula for many, many, many years. In fact, I was just at the July City Council meeting, and I saw you there, and you could tell that the West Ashley Council members were very feeling a certain amount of urgency about getting going on these, getting these things moving along. Something that's obviously not particularly typical of a governmental process, and the effort to nail down the makeup of this panel still seems a bit fluid, but I'm sure it's going to come together soon. It does sound like that it's very business focused, and maybe some of that. I'm sure the need for some residential insights would be a good one, and I hope that they're listening. So, and we can make sure that the word gets out. But a process like this does run the risk of just ending up on a shelf. The Century 5 plan has a lot of stakeholders and a lot of groups that have a vested interest in sort of making sure that keeps moving along, and it's been shaped by many years of scrutiny and interest, and some of that has been due to groups of people that sort of are continuity, as opposed to just the politicians that sort of come and go. But unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be a lot of patience associated with this process. maybe you have any thoughts on
well,
my stream of consciousness there?
I think you're right. That I think the lack of patience is that it's been neglected for so long.
And
people are now feeling it. And I think a lot of people really didn't know what they were missing. I mean, I think it's important that we see what works west of the Ashley, what's not working, and we get rid of it. And then we see what could work and how we make the best of what we have there that maybe is not working but could work better.
Right.
So we need new stuff. We need to fix the stuff that's not working quite well. We need to get rid of the stuff that's not working at all. And we need to really be letting people know about the things that do work west of the Ashley really well, because we've got some great neighborhoods and great communities. It's just we haven't had a whole lot of attention in terms of public resources in a long time, but that has surely changed.
It has definitely changed. And I know there's been an awful lot of, you know, an awful lot of not scrutiny, but a lot of focus on look what Avondale has done. And a lot of that was very grassroots. I mean, the business owners and the residents in that area sort of took hold of that, and that's building. I mean, there's still Ackerman Park, which is near there, is going to be the site of the West Ashley Farmers Market, as I understand it.
Yes, and that's important on a number of levels, because in order to have a community survive, for a healthy community, you've got to have reasonably priced nutritional food that's accessible.
Right.
And one of the concerns that we had with the Whole Foods market coming in was that we're losing three businesses because of that, eventually. Doshers, the child care center, and the gas station where you could get non-ethanol gas and diesel at the same place west of the Ashley, which a lot of people like to be able to do that, or the boating community particularly. And being able to find diesel over there is really nice. But as it looks, that at some point will all go away. So my concern was that we need to have that Doshers that's there now is a very walkable, affordable grocery store for lots of the neighborhoods.
And it's been embedded in the community
absolutely.
For so long.
And a lot of us depend on it for a lot of things you can't get anywhere else. So we're supportive of Doshers remaining in the community, and we need to make a point of saying that. The farmers market being located at Ackerman Park, we were talking about the other day, that is a really good central location for walkable neighborhoods and people who would not have access if Doshers does go away in 5 or 6 years. We need to make sure that access is still there for that food. And the decision to put the farmers market at Ackerman Park was a really good decision because we already own it. It's off the tax rolls. We're not taking property off the tax rolls that we need the income from. It's a wonderful space and great parking around it. And I think it's the right choice.
Well, that's excellent. I'm glad for that confirmation. And I'm sure that the neighborhoods are really excited to hear what might be in the offing, I guess.
Yes.
I mean, we're always going to have an issue with James Island, maybe this work in West Ashley will kind of inspire the James Island sort of fractious
Well, both of them have a lot of undoing to do. You know, there's
sure.
a lot of stuff that was done in the 60s and 70s that wasn't particularly helpful to the way that we live on James Island or West Ashley.
Right. Right.
And Rethink Folly Road was
a good
kind
first
of a
step.
Response to that. Yeah.
Well, so I shift gears a little bit, and there's this imminent sort of moving forward. I saw the letter to the county from the city about the bike pedestrian lane conversion on the Legree Bridge, and as well as I heard during the course of the City Council meeting, Tom O'Rourke talked about the County Park comprehensive planning process that really seems to offer opportunities to invigorate some of the commercial and residential areas and parks, including the West Ashley Greenway, in ways that really could jumpstart changes in a short amount of time. I mean, the linkage of parks through a network of parks that are linked actually by bicycle and alternative transportation mode seems to be a real impetus for coalescing neighborhoods and making communities much stronger.
It makes commercial much stronger too, because commercial can't survive without people within walking distance,
right,
to support it. And if we don't beef up our neighborhoods and do the things that we can to make them better, then commercial suffers. And by the same token, we've got areas, I mean, we've got 35,000 new people that will be in Charleston by 2030. Now, I think if you ask somebody, do you want to plan for them now, or do you just want to wait for them to get here and let them do it? know, the time is to plan for it now. And
right.
One of the big things we need to be talking about is where we increase density, because we have to. And it needs to be accessible, so it's got to be closer in. So closer in areas around the peninsula are going to see densities increase. It has to happen. There's no other
right.
way to do it.
Right.
So we need to look for the places where it impacts us negatively the least, if at all. So when we
sure.
look at West Ashley, to me, Citadel Mall and the Sam Rittenberg Corridor is a no-brainer for dense
right.
development. Who is going to care if you put a 10 or 12 story building in Citadel Mall? Nobody. And we need it badly.
Right.
And who's going to benefit from that? Citadel Mall. They need it badly. These are symbiotic relationships that are just natural alliances that we need to get in there and make.
Well, and I am sure that all someone has to hear is 10 stories and they're like completely freaked out. I mean, I suppose
there was a 10-story building on that property before the mall was built. The South Park building is that big.
Oh, okay.
And
very good.
People don't even notice that.
Right.
If you do it right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is true that you can integrate density in a way that it doesn't negatively impact.
Right. But the key to that is the transportation system for the people that we're putting there back into the city, so that they're not further crippling what we already have.
Right.
So
right.
What Charlestonians need to understand is that the cost of having lower density in the areas that are really important to us, like the historic districts and things downtown, the cost of that is a viable transportation system to where you want to put that density, because
right.
you have to put the density somewhere.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons this connectivity is at the core something very important, but it's also the kind of thing that connects. I think that we think constantly about West Ashley distinct from downtown, and at some level we have to think of those things being one place and
yes.
connectivity. And one of those things is to kind of slow down and take it in, and or to have options other than sitting alone in a car, trying to drive back and forth. And that the proposed medical district is a real case in point. I think that there's been there's the low line, certainly the greenway and bikeway, a bike pedestrian lane on the North Bridge,
mm-hmm.
and all the neighborhoods that would be linked by those kinds of avenues. And I'm sure the need for public transportation that likewise sort of overlays in all these areas is crucial to really making a cohesive or a city that actually can thrive.
Yes,
and I
think you raise a good point with the medical complex area. That's an edge of the city that has been frayed for a long time.
Right.
The other edge on the West Ashley side has been frayed for a long time. What you're seeing now is like the apartment building that's being constructed where Turkey's Towing was.
Right.
That building will be opening soon. You've got a 600 space parking lot next to that is leased by the VA. On the other side of the bridge, you've got the medical center development and Publix coming in over there. Does anybody really think that the folks that live in this apartment building are not going to walk across the bridge to Publix to get their groceries?
Exactly.
I mean, we are connecting these communities. We're knitting them back together. And that's the right thing to do.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's I think that, you know, some of this bears some comparison to Atlanta's Beltline, which is not a – it's actually kind of a – reuse of an old railroad right-of-way, and it's 22 miles, and it has and it's been a long sort of process, but one that they've gone at with some gusto since I believe it's 1999, and it connects 45 neighborhoods. And I think when we start thinking about the ways that we're connecting in terms of each pearl on the necklace is crucial, you know, is actually part of a larger whole. And that's
I think these railway rights of way are becoming very important to us. They kind of were, you know, not thought of for a while, and there were plenty of them around here, still are. Some of them are used, a lot of them aren't. But it's interesting that when we sit down to the table to come up with conceptual ideas for what we need to do in the areas where these rights of way exist, we don't ever ask anybody from the railways to sit with us.
To be at the table, right.
And I think we need to start doing that. They can be a big part of it, and I think if we had them at the table, some good ideas might come out of it.
Well, and I think, you know, the North Charleston is actually sort of going through a little bit of a conflict. I don't know how much you're aware that there's an intermodal
transit
facility that's being built kind of in the old Navy base area. And it's really impacting neighborhoods that it abuts. In fact, they're taking out 100 plus units of affordable housing. And and there's a real interest in saying, you know, you can't do that without rebuilding lost housing.
We have a history
somewhere
of
else.
That. I can tell you, my first job when I was here at the College of Charleston was I helped set up the Division of Archives and Records for the City of Charleston with Marie Hollings and Ernestine Fellers and Dr. Margareta Childs.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked there for several years and cataloged all of Mayor Gilyard's correspondence from 1957 to 75, which covered the era when there was a lot of federal money with no strings attached that you could get for cities, urban areas, to do what was called the removal of urban blight.
Right. Right.
Slum removal. And, you know, as long as you could get the neighborhood to agree it was a slum, you could get rid of it. And Charleston got more than its share of that money for I-26, for the Gilyard Auditorium, for the Crosstown Expressway. And I can tell you that in a few short years, the city of Charleston eliminated 1,100 dwelling units and never replaced a one of them.
Oh,
and
wow.
These are folks who were forced out and sent mostly to North Charleston. But there was no replacement of that.
And there was no discussion.
No, and I'm looking at what's happening right now privately with the closing of the Sergeant Jasper, the Longborough neighborhood, which had been affordable housing. And a lot of these developments that have given us affordable homes for people in areas that are not very affordable. And business decisions are being made, and those units are disappearing by the hundreds.
Right. Oh, well, and it's really crippling. I mean, it's certainly the potential for. I mean, that's not a sustainable model.
Right.
I guess.
But by the same token, we do not have enabling legislation in South Carolina to allow us to require any percentage of affordable housing in developments, and that's something that could change this year. If we could get people mobilized in the legislature to get that piece of it changed.
Yeah, and I think that is really something very important, and to have for municipalities, because it's not just Charleston, but it's Greenville, Columbia, Myrtle Beach. They're all having issues with affordable housing, and their toolbox is limited because of the state laws, and I think there's some real interest in sort of seeing ways of creating affordable housing with, you know, that doesn't cripple the private property rights or whatever you want to call it for the ability to make a profit, but that it can be an integral part of development in the state, and certainly is an issue that we see in Charleston. Density helps, but at the numbers of people that are moving here, they're needing those units even as we speak.
Absolutely.
So,
and the infill that we talked about a little bit earlier, like I can tell you that in the Ardmore area and Sherwood Forest and some other areas around here that are still relatively affordable had large lots. You know, the houses weren't always the best, but the lots were big.
Right.
And those lots are affordable. you can buy those. And in some cases, you can put duplexes on them, depending on what the zoning is.
Right.
But that's a way that we even if we had a system of producing modular housing in maybe different floor plans, that we had nonprofits, for-profits, or anybody who really wanted to buy these units at basically cost, we could get these units out the door and onto some affordable lots in neighborhoods that already exist. We can reuse the infrastructure that's already there, the sewer taps, the water taps, and all of those expensive things are already in place. Let's identify these things and start putting something on these properties that's affordable
or
and
raising
needed.
Awareness, and if
right.
nothing else, of this available.
And pulling the neighborhoods
available.
Up at the same time.
Right. Right. I think that's a real key. And I mean, obviously, the other piece of the puzzle is, you know, that you encourage families to be involved in the public school systems, because we need those things to kind of happen at the same time. And, you know, to the involvement in the schools and so that we have a community at large that is whole.
Yes.
And looking out
and
for each other. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, I know that we've just touched the tip of the iceberg in this conversation, and I'm sure we could discuss this for much longer, but our time is closing in a bit. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you one final question. So, what would you do if you were mayor? I have to ask it.
Well, I can tell you that from my perspective, coming from West Ashley, I really think that Sam Rittenberg corridor is just a diamond in the rough. You know, the transportation folks should be thrilled. We have more pavement out there than we ever needed.
Right.
And, you know, in fact, we're talking about getting rid of pavement out there. But the ability to do higher density new neighborhoods in that area and rethink the commercial areas that are out there that are not doing that great. We could make a much better place out of that, and we could easily connect that because we're not using up the land.
You know,
we're getting much more tax income by using a smaller footprint of land. We're getting a lot more tax income from that land.
Right.
That income is what we use to pay for the transportation link back to where everybody needs to go, downtown.
Right.
So if it were me, I'd focus on Sam Rittenberg. I think John Tecklenburg is doing a great job of doing that. He's doing exactly what he said he was going to do. And he's still getting his sea legs, but he's doing well.
Well, that's good. Well, thank you, Charlie, for coming in and talking with me. You certainly have your finger on the pulse of the West Ashley community. And I'm so glad that we've had this opportunity to share with our audience how important it is to thoughtfully approach this area. And the goal should be to improve the livability of West Ashley for everybody.
Yes.
And to work to bring the whole of Charleston together.
Absolutely.
So that wraps up this segment of Small Talks, Big Ideas with If You Were Mayor. And again, we invite you to go online to our Facebook page to submit your questions, feedback, and ideas for this segment. We'll post a link to the full report we discussed today, or to the blogs that we've discussed today, and happy to share more resources and answer questions. So next week, you can tune in to Small Talks, Big Ideas for your chance to hear from Low Country Local First about something homegrown. And thank you for tuning in to 96.3 FM Ohm Radio Charleston and supporting your local nonprofit radio station. If You Were Mayor, we'll be back in about a month for another deep dive into the Charleston region. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.